Okay. What are you laughing at?
Just a wistful sigh. We need 5 seconds of wistful sigh. Another five. Okay, and regret.
Why did I agree to do these podcasts?
What do you mean agree? You came up with it.
Number 5.
You proposed to me.
Why did I get into this marriage? All right. Enough blame. There's enough blame to go around.
Wait, those are two separate things.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Sneaky Dragon. My name is David Dedrick.
I'm Ian Boothby.
And today's show...
Stuttered. You start with a stutter.
Start with a stutter. That's a bad sign?
Yep.
The show is over.
No,
we should
start
again.
It's not over, but we're headed for failure.
We're headed for failure. Well, that's where we usually start.
You have started by stepping on a crack, breaking the podcast back. I'm sorry. That's mean. A stutter is involuntary. I could make fun of a stammer. Because a stammer is comedic. A stammer is like a Porky Pig. Stammer is funny. Stutter is not funny.
Stutter is, stutters aren't hilarious.
No, but stammers are very funny.
I knew someone who did a backward stutter, and it was really uncomfortable making you.
What's that?
That was backward speaking.
Oh, very good.
Because I was talking about a backward stammer, or stutter, so I decided to.
Ah, you screwed up again. Well done.
Yeah, I did. The show is doomed.
That's right. Great.
Doomed.
It's okay. We've only been doing this for a year, folks. We'll get this together really soon. This is a drag because I just found out that another podcast I'm on called Funny Enough with people.
With
Patrick and Art is now downloadable, and I just want to listen to my other podcast and not do this one.
Is that right?
Yeah, I'd rather listen to me than be me.
Then do this. Do the work.
Yeah, because I've done that work, so now it's easy, and I can just listen to it and go, yeah, good.
So
though it's filthy. Oh my God, it's filthy. Let me just say, I know we got an explicit warning on here.
Yeah.
But we you know, we're still pretty clean cut, straight
we
edge
are.
Fellas.
We are. In fact, I don't even like the swearing.
You don't like the swearing?
No.
Why'd you make it explicit?
If it gets too sweary, I feel like we're going too far.
Mm.
And it makes me feel like, because, you know, there's that kind of nerdiness where you want to swear to kind of cover up that you're...
Oh, makes a badass.
Yeah, like you feel like I'm kind of a square. I'm kind of a queen cut.
You're a queen cut guy.
I'm a queen cut.
Those of you that are aware of what a queen size bed is, the type of sheets they have on those are queen cut sheets. And Dave is what you call a queen cut guy.
That's right.
Meaning he's not a hugely... He's a big guy.
I'm big.
He is big, but he's not like morbidly obese. So he is like a fit guy. He's your queen cut.
I'm queen cut.
You're not a single. You're not a double. You're a queen cut.
My voice is not working today. I mean, my tongue is not working.
You
today.
Also look just like Freddie Mercury.
I look exactly like him because I have the mustache.
Well, everything but the
spandex
mustache.
Pat
everything
pants.
But the mustache.
So I'm pre-78 Freddie Mercury.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder when he grew the mustache because it did come later on.
I always think when people have the mutton chops, I think that's not mutton chops. It's an anti-goatee.
Mutton chop. Do you know what they call sideburns in England?
No.
Sideboards.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I can see that.
Which is weird.
Yeah, well, because they have sheep around, so you can't use that term near a sheep because it's offensive to a sheep. In a city, you can because there's no sheep around. You can say, hey, mutton chop this, mutton chop that. But if you do, like, they'll go like, hey, behind you, and that's our word.
But I think a mutton chop is a different, I think it's actual, like, when they have that formed...
Wolverine style.
Yeah, kind of as a big, long side... board,
right,
rather than the shorter.
Here's a weird thing about Wolverine. When he, like, say, gets his face burned off and regenerates, it regenerates the mutton chops as well, like exactly that. Yeah. He never gets a full beard,
no,
or any of that business. You know what I could see would make more sense, like if I was, say, doing a comic book, and Lord knows he would grow a full beard and then he'd just immediately shave it off with his razor fingers.
Yeah, he could.
Claws, I guess. Claws, you call them.
Razor fingers. I prefer that. Let's go back to swearing.
Okay. So, could I just say about that? I heard something from Mike Birbiglia on a different podcast. I'm just going to say what other podcasts say.
Was this when you were on as well?
On Mike Birbiglia's podcast?
Yeah, were you on his podcast?
He does not have a podcast.
Oh, okay.
He's the star of a movie called Sleepwalk With Me, which is available online now.
Yeah.
He does not swear. He's one of these comedians that doesn't swear, but he will talk about
what a fucking loser.
But what he says is what he does is he will think the swear and he will just not say the swear.
Okay.
So it'll just like, and I thought, what the, and he'll say that, okay. And everyone fills in the blank and they're all fine.
Yeah.
So, you know, you would not watch him and go, what a cleany McCleanington.
Yeah.
You know, but he just does not care to swear on stage because he feels it takes it in a different direction, and not for an ethical reason, but just for an artistic reason.
Mm-hmm.
which I prefer to the comedians that get on their high horse and like, well, anyone can swear and it's easy to swear. And it's like, if it's so fucking easy, let's see you do it.
Well, I don't think it's easy to swear. And I don't think that we're trying to go for easy laughs when we're swearing. But I just think that it's a conversational tick mm-hmm. that can kind of take over when you're speaking.
Sure can.
And, and so it becomes habitual. And I do sometimes think it's a kind of a cover-up thing that people do in order to, I don't just use big words. I also swear. Mm-hmm. Therefore, that evens out. Now the seesaw is even. It's straight across. It's not up or down. It's,
right.
I don't know. This seems kind of, it just seems sort of.
Hack? Are you saying it's hack?
No, not hack. It just seems like a compensating.
Yeah.
That's like, it's the
most conversation is compensating.
It's the verbal equivalent of driving in a giant pickup truck with big giant wheels on it. Mm-hmm. And basically what you're saying is, I have no penis. So fuck that.
Do women say that when they drive?
Do women drive big trucks?
Yeah. And when women drive big trucks, is that because they do not have a penis?
Yes. That's also, it's a penis substitute for women as well.
When you're talking about people compensating and whatnot, mm-hmm. I sometimes eat at a restaurant and I'm alone and I'm doing little doodles or whatever.
Okay, that's weird. Weird. It's weird to eat alone in a restaurant.
No, not at all.
You don't feel awkward when you eat alone in a restaurant?
I mostly eat alone in restaurants, okay. Yeah. Because it's just like I'm on my way to work or something and, I'll do the thing. But when you see people talking to each other, it's interesting to me. Like, I don't want to say it like desperation, but you can see like them looking at each other and just trying to communicate with each other so badly. And I just wish we at some point will get that telepathy that you can just go, and just relax. Because there's someone just trying to get, not even like get their point across. Like it's mm-hmm. not even an argument.
Yeah.
They're just trying desperately to get each other to understand each other. And just go, get me. Please get me.
Wow.
And I see that a lot. Maybe more so around the holidays. because that's the time of year you gather in the big family dinners and just go, does the family understand me? No, they don't. That's okay.
Well, it's not okay, but they hardly ever do understand us.
I was thinking about that, though, and I was thinking, like, the only thing that would be, to quote Oscar Wilde, the only thing worse than being not understood by your family would be being understood by your family. Mm. Like, if they really understood you, mm-hmm. yikes. That'd be weird.
Do you think that'd be bad?
I think it would be like being, how comfortable do you feel being naked in front of your parents?
Well, maybe that's the case, but I think that... What
it's a bit of a joke line.
We don't want to
it's also a little bit.
We don't want to be understood by our parents, though.
Yeah, that's interesting.
We want to be accepted by our parents and loved by our parents. And so, yes. If you feel that what you are is not accepted by your parents, mm-hmm. that is terrible.
Well, I think what you got to get there is the unconditional love, obviously. Like, mm-hmm. you got to love no matter what.
Very, very rare.
But you're probably not going to get your parents either. Like, there's stuff that your parents do that you will never understand.
You don't want to get people in that way, I don't think.
Hmm. Do you not want to do that with, like, say, a friend or your spouse? Would you not want to get them?
To get them entirely?
Yeah, I can understand, like, your daughters, you would not want to completely, because they got to be their own people and they go off and mm-hmm. that's the way the world goes. But someone who you are spending your life with, or like good friends that you will know for years and years and years, do mm-hmm. you want to get them?
I think that every person deserves their private part of their life.
True.
And so I think to get someone that way would be an incredibly intimate, invasive sort of...
If it's kind forced, of a life. But what I see...
But I don't even mean forced. I just mean that, like, let's just think of my wife, Lisa, who, there's parts of her life that I don't participate in. So I don't go with her to her, like, to horse things, so there's lots of horse things and I'll hear about them from her. Mm-hmm. So she'll share stories and things about them. But in other ways, they're close to me.
But do you get why she goes to those? Do you get motivation?
Of course I am.
Yeah, I think that's a little true. Different. Like, if she went to a certain...
I get it to a point.
If she went to a certain type of movie that you did not get, or a certain type of music that did not connect mm-hmm. with you mm-hmm. In any way, and you're like, why is she like that freaking music? That kind of situation, mm-hmm. I think, would be a little different. And that's what I see, like, in the restaurants. It's, in the little... I don't overhear. But you see people just desperately trying to explain themselves. Mm-hmm. I think there's such a huge hunger that we have to be understood. But I guess, what you're saying of maybe it's not even understood, but just accepted is, you just want that person to put their hand on your shoulder and just go, yeah.
It's great. Yeah, what you want to do is great. Yeah.
No, you're good. No, I love you. It's all right. Yeah, it's good.
I don't understand. I don't understand why you want to be a comedian.
Yeah.
But I think it's great that that's what you want to do. That's what you wanted your dad to say, right? Mm-hmm. Or your mom to say, I don't understand why you want to be a writer. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, it seems crazy and possibly will lead you to starvation. But I understand, I get it. And I accept it.
Well, there's the tradition I have with like friends of mine who will say their parents' advice. And their parents' advice, if like you're an actor, is like, hey, you should get into movies. They'll say that. Yeah. And it's just like, oh, you don't get this at all. That's okay. You don't get the process at all. You don't get like how you do a certain thing. It's like, I guess they think like, you want to be a doctor, go to medical school and you will be a doctor. Mm-hmm. You know, but there's nothing with like being an actor, being a writer, being whatever. Hey, you know what you should do? You should go on the Larry King show and tell him your ideas. And I mean, literally, that's what a lot of parents, these are people who have raised children, can fix things, go out in public, people understand how they work. You know, I won't say who my friend is, but like their parent, their advice was, here, you want to be an actor? What you should do is go to Los Angeles and meet Tom Hanks because you look a bit like him. And you should just go up to him and go, don't we look a bit alike? And you know what? He'd probably put you in his movies. And they think that's how you do it.
Yeah.
Like they're functioning adults. This is not a child. This is someone who thinks a good idea is to go up to a celebrity and go, hi, you look like me. How about this?
Well, that's it.
Which in the Carol Burnett case with Vicki Lawrence actually was the advice the mom gave. And actually that did work. So there is one case where that did work.
Well, I guess there's one case where someone sat in a drugstore at the lunch counter and was discovered.
You know what?
Now we all should go to the lunch counter.
I'm going to bet there was a lot of people discovered and then got fucked on a couch, sorry for the swears, and then nothing ended up happening. Yeah. There's a lot of discovering that goes on in Hollywood.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, discovering of pretty girls. Yeah. Like the old prospector. Well, girls! I found a whole vein of girls.
If you read about Marilyn Monroe's early life, it's very sordid. Before she came to fame, her early years were very, very sordid.
And there's a bit of something where you go like, now should you then tell your parents that's not how movies work? Or should you, because if you actually told them how it works and the odds are so bad, that would be worse for them. So
the odds are bad that they would be listening to you.
Yeah, that's true. Like, that's the other thing. It's like people have their own cycle of like thing. They, you know, they've completed that loop. And if you want to put new information into it, that is not going to happen. No. And quite often with your parents, you have already, your loop is done, buddy. Like we know you plenty. And if you come in and go, I got new information about me, I bet you don't. And how do you go?
Yeah. Oh, that's probably true.
Yeah. The only thing you could do is come in and go, I like heroin. And they go, I can put that into there. Boom. And then you're the son who's on heroin. And I hope he gets off heroin. And that's a story that they can tell their friends. That my son's on heroin.
We all hope that people's sons get off heroin.
Yes. For the holidays.
For the holidays.
Have you seen that special Heroin for the Holidays?
No, I haven't. What is it?
It's a story about a rabbit.
Okay.
Hoppy heroin.
Yeah.
And he gets on heroin. And he gets off it on Christmas and gets his shit together to become the Easter Bunny.
Greatest American Heroin. That's the show, right?
Look at what's happened to me. I can't believe it myself. I'm in the alley. I'm given a blowjob. Should have been somebody else. Believe it or not, you're coming in my hair. Never thought I would feel so free.
Why aren't you singing it, though? Believe it or not, you're coming
we'll have to pay
in
for
my
it.
Hair.
We'll have to pay
true.
For it.
That's true. We don't want to pay for it.
The holidays.
So, you know, well, we had a guest last week.
And so, what a guest.
He was very good.
Do you know the nice thing about him as well is he had a name that can be spelled by the calendar. The only name that can be spelled by the calendar.
Really? How do you mean?
Jason. July, August, September, October, November. Spells
wow.
Jason. It's the only name that is spelled by the calendar.
I wonder if he knew that. I hope he listens to this episode.
I'm sure eventually he looked at a calendar and went, hey, there's my name.
Pretty much now that he's been on the show, he'll only listen to one episode. His.
Yeah.
Just over and over again.
No, he was
I haven't heard it enough. I'm going to go back and listen to that one more time.
The nice thing was he actually had listened to the show. And a siren went by. Everyone, take a drink. That is the drinking game.
I'm going
to
take a drink.
He knew the show well enough to know that it was our first show we've ever done where a siren did not go by.
Yeah.
Because for the holidays, they gave up. We gave up the fire and ambulance departments and just let them, you know.
Let them go.
Let them go. Just like, hey, guys, take 911 off.
Did you hear what happened over Christmas in Newtown where the horrible school shooting was? The neighboring police departments volunteered their time and gave all the policemen in Newtown the Christmas off.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Oh, good, good, good.
So that was very nice.
I mean, people put stuff on Facebook all the time, but there was something I did like, which was a Fred Rogers quote about tragedy. He was like, whenever these tragedies happen, you go like, oh, the world's changing. Oh, it's terrible. And it is, you know, I don't know if the world, everything changes. But what he was saying, like, was when he was a little kid and something horrible happened, his mom said to him, always look for the helpers.
Yeah.
Because there's always helpers around. Mm-hmm. And so just look at them and see there's always, for whatever the one bad person did the one bad thing, you will have dozens to hundreds of people going, how can I help? What can I do?
Yeah.
And you got to remember, they outnumber the one. Always.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, it doesn't, you know, everything is... tragedy is still tragic, but it doesn't mean the whole paradigm has shifted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are still, I believe, genuinely good. Said Anne Frank, before she was killed by the Nazis. Good point, Ian. You have stopped your own argument cold.
But even though...
Sorry about that.
Even though Anne Frank was killed by the Nazis, which of course is terrible,
yeah,
there were people who kept her safe and her family safe.
True. There you go.
For that time. You know, and then there were, like, people who behaved in a heroic manner during that time that, you know, can at least shine a light through that incredible darkness, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's the King of Denmark also wearing a star, you know, whether it's...
I didn't know about that. That's...
Oh, yeah, yeah. He also wore a yellow star and would not allow the Nazis to take Jews out of Denmark and wouldn't officially allow the, like an SS army to be formed out of Danish citizens. Mm-hmm. They could volunteer if they wanted, and some did go and fight for the Nazis, but he would not allow it to be like a conscription. So
this is one thing that I like about...
Which is pretty brave, considering you're absolutely a small country under the boot of...
Well, I mean, there used to be the thing always when people, you know, a stereotype was people would go, why is it only bad news on the news? Why is it only the bad things? Why can't we see the good? And so yeah, they'd have a thing at the end where someone saves a puppy or something like that, yeah, which is okay, but it always felt a little treacly. It always felt a little over the top.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not where good comes from. You see the bad, obviously, in the news, and it's like, this person killed this person, this horrible, horrible.
Yeah.
But that's one thing I do like about, like, a Facebook or Twitter, is you see people showing pictures of their kids, or just like, my kid did this, and we went to the park, and we did this, and we played, and we did this. And it's like, that to me is the good news. That to me is that, you know what, life is still going on good,
yeah,
while the terrible, terrible is going on. But for the majority, someone just made breakfast for their kid. You know, this person did this. This, you know, you volunteered, you know, your services for these people. My sister, you know, over the holidays was doing some wonderful things for people as well. The good happens, but that's not going to make it to the news. It's nice that we have like a little something here where maybe, I mean, a lot of people do also still keep it mum. They don't, yeah, you know, go, I've been doing this and I've been doing that. But, you know, there's more. I just feel there's more good. And if there's not, you know, I think we are our compass points generally towards the good, because otherwise we would be dead. If we didn't work together in general, mm-hmm, as a community,
yeah,
and have just a general feeling of affection for each other, it would be murder town.
Well, that's being Canadian in a way, though, that sort of...
Do you think America is...
I think
is
they have different? A different attitude to...
Do you think England is different?
Yes, I do.
How so?
Well, I think there's that great joke, how do you get 30 Canadians out of a pool?
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody out of the pool. That's, you know, and I don't think that joke works for America, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because someone would get sued. Someone would sue the person telling you to get out of the pool.
No, here's how the joke would work in America.
Someone would argue.
How do you get 30 Americans out of a pool?
Okay.
Something's wrong with your water. We'll tell you at the 11 o'clock news. Oh, fuck, we got to get out of this water.
It's possible.
Yeah.
It's possible. Or people would just sit in there like, I'm not letting them tell me what to do.
And let me just say, the nice thing about the Canadian joke is it shows we got nice clean water. People want to go in our pools. Of course they do. We got beautiful water.
British... I don't know if it would work for British either.
I think it would. Because British people are polite. I think our politeness is a reflection of the British politeness.
But I always liked my dad's joke about English people, which was...
Fuck them.
He said, the thing about an English person is from far away, you can't tell an English person from far away. And up close, you can't tell them anything. And I think that kind of does, if you know English people, they do like to talk and they do... have a point of view that they're very eager to get across to you.
It's very much like we're going to do a lot of stereotypes here, folks.
It's very much like the Irish who like to drink.
Do you know what Canadians like doing? Stereotyping.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm just saying that generally. Generally, they like stereotyping.
Well, eating cheese.
And cheese.
And eating bacon.
Now, I'd say if you go to the Maritimes, you're going to find everyone has an opinion as well. Like when I was in Halifax, I've never been to Newfoundland.
Okay.
But I know enough people from Newfoundland that I know every one of them has a goddamn opinion.
Is that right?
And they're going to yell it at you. They're going to tell you that opinion.
Okay.
You know, that's the thing. Like Halifax, everyone's got it. Everyone's got something to say.
Mm.
And, you know, just came back from England, and something that we noticed, like, just even like in Leeds, we were just in Leeds.
Yeah.
There's a jokiness and a friendliness that we do not have here. We have in Canada, and the yeah, same with the States. It's mm-hmm, not you don't make the eye contact. And, you know, you're not supposed to make total eye contact, but
yeah,
there's just a... you'll do a joke with someone on the corner. You see something, you go, ah, blah, blah, and you'll do this. Or you go into a shop and the women are calling each other love. There's love. Hey, love. How about this? Love, 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 love. You know, there's just like, we would not do that. Mm-hmm. That feels weird.
Yeah.
But there's just a, we're all in this together. We're going to joke our way out of it. We've been through some shit in England. There's that. And we have not been through some shit in Canada.
No.
You know.
What do we like to line up? That's a hardship for us, you know.
Well.
We're like, oh, line. Line. In England, they're just like, eh, get in the queue.
Yeah, it's a queue. A queue sounds better than a line.
Guess that's
a line is a straight line. It's boring. What's a queue? A queue sounds like you're queuing for something.
Yeah.
You're going to see a nice show or get some, you know, when you go see a show in England, you get ice cream in the middle. Fuck yeah. What do we get here? Maybe some alcohol if you pay a lot, but they just ice cream.
Yeah.
Of course you'd be happy in
get
England.
In the queue. You, 20 minutes later, you can pay for your warm drink.
That's fine. You get an ice cream. Can't complain.
There's less warm drinks in England than the first time I went.
The
first time I went to England, there was absolutely no freezers, like no refrigerated drink holders in any store I ever went into anywhere in England.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was warm. Now, when you go, way more common to find, like, you know, the refrigerated bottle holders that you see here.
I think in Canada, if I'm going with a stereotype, we are more reactionary, as in we will not initiate, but we will react to things more than I think the States. Whereas in the States, it's you got to do it yourself. American dream. Get her done.
That's why we're a warrior nation.
But we are less afraid. But we are less afraid of each other. So that if someone does need help, you will back up with the couch into the van and not think they're going to Buffalo Bill you.
What's that?
Oh, Buffalo Bill you?
Yeah.
That's in Silence of the Lambs. That's how you can get someone into a van. Like, hey, help me with this, and you get in the van, and then the door shuts, and like, oh, now I'm a coat.
No, you're an ascot. Damn it. Only an ascot?
Yeah. You're a slim guy. You know why? Because you're queen size.
Well, I have acne. So we had to cut out a lot of the...
Well, then you can make a nice paisley pattern out of that.
Like, there you go.
Wouldn't that be terrible? It's like someone, the Buffalo Bill, and just like, oh, they got acne. Now I got to get someone else. Got to let them go. It's like, what? What's up? And it's like, you know why you're being let go. And one, you're happy to be alive.
Yeah.
But two, you're like, oh, fuck, I feel a little bad about my skin.
Damn, wish I'd use that stuff they advertise on television whose name has escaped David's mind.
No, the kind that helps make your skin into a coat?
No, it makes your skin... That's right. What's it called?
What?
It's like a cleanser that you
I want to say Proaxyl or something like
Proactive.
That. Proactive. They sell that in the States.
They sell it in Canada.
They used to just sell them in the States. And we used to go to Bell's Fair Mall. And it was like a big Proactive, like counter in the middle. It's like, but like next to the candy. It's like the giant thing of candy. And then, you know, whatever, your Orange Julius, then your fattiest of foods, and then a Proactive stand. It's just like, fuck off.
It seems its day is done because at our local mall where I live, it's gone.
Yeah.
So I take that as a sign of the changing times.
I take it as a sign that you can get it online. Easy. And no one wants to go into a shop and go, zit cream, please.
This one's one of those center aisle stands. You know how they have those? And so they have like a belt one and one that sells stuffed animal pillows.
Here's where they made their big mistake was they had attractive people selling it. And like, you don't want to go up to the pretty girl and go, I have some bad acne. Please give me the biggest tub of acne cream you have. What's your name?
Would you mind giving your email address so we can send you promotional offers about this giant
Certainly.
Acne cream?
Yes, I would. Like,
I'd love to get that.
This, I believe, really is a thing. Like, I was at a food fair and it was like next to the fatty foods. Mm-hmm. And then there was a...
Were you by yourself?
Was I by myself? No, not in this case.
Okay.
There was a defibrillator. Defibrillator. If you can't say it, it means you may be having a stroke. Please say this word. Defibrillator? I'm sorry, sir. We're going to have to use this on you.
Defibrillator.
But they had that by the food court.
Say it fast.
And it's just like, look, man, it's just saying it's bad for you. Look, you've got the thing that saves your heart.
What, it was like on the wall or something?
Yeah, it's there. Like, you can use it. Well, you have to take it out.
You can use it. This is for the general public.
It is.
Anyone can use a defibrillator.
Yes, it's an emergency situation. Yeah, you can't go, could I have permission? Fill out this form. No, if you need a defibrillator.
But you
don't use it on yourself.
How are you qualified to use a defibrillator?
It's got instructions on it. It's an emergency situation.
It's like, out of the way, I've watched Emergency. I know what I'm doing. Clear.
That is an emergency show. That's true.
Yeah.
Emergency does have emergencies on it.
Yeah.
No, there are defibrillators. You can buy one. You can buy a defibrillator if you want. I can't say the goddamned word. I went through so much speech training. So much.
Who drove you to speech training?
My father.
Your father did?
Sometimes my mother, but sometimes my father.
Did you take speech training because you wanted to be an actor?
Yes.
And so they drove you to speech training.
Yeah, in White Rock. They drove me from Delta to White Rock. And they paid for it, which was a pretty penny.
That's nice of them. I mean, that's...
It was.
That's acceptance.
Okay.
You know, were they those ambiguous acceptance? You know, it's kind of like, we'll do this for you, but at the same time, you really shouldn't be thinking about doing this for the rest of your life.
No, it wasn't necessarily that. Like, I'd had enough success at it that point proven.
Yeah.
Like, I'd been writing and being on TV since I was 13, loosely, and then it was sort of getting more and more. So,
yeah.
I did a play, and it was the first sort of speaking lines I had, and one of the older actresses in it, she was a drama teacher, and so I was going for speech training. It was Trinity College of London program, and she was one of the teachers for it. So okay. I would go and get the private things. I think where it came from was just a general, you need an education. What are you doing? This. You need an education in that. So get the education in that.
Yeah.
And it was, again, very good. Very good to do. Don't know if it was necessary in the long run. I mean, it's good. It's all part of, you know, what I had and what I did.
Yeah.
But if I had instead just done a bunch of plays instead, maybe that would have been a better way to go. I don't know. I do not know. But traditionally, you know, my parents wanted me to go to college for sure. So I went to Douglas College as well and took theater. Once again, don't know if that helped or not. You know, we did lip syncing. We did lip syncing demonstrations to songs. Does that help me now? I do not know.
It doesn't help you at karaoke.
I actually paid my rent doing karaoke at some points during college because we had at Mugs and Jugs, which is exactly what you think it is.
Mm-hmm.
They had
jugs of beer,
yeah,
and mugshots of criminals on the wall.
That's right. That's how it was. Yeah. It was a 1930s gangster bar.
Yeah.
It was a speakeasy style thing.
Yeah.
But they would have like karaoke nights. So I'd go there and I would do impressions and sing in different voices. And I'm not in any way doing that now because that is very much my past. But yeah, I would occasionally make a couple $100. And
listeners, please write letters.
No, do not, sir. And I would pay a little bit of the rent. It's weird. Like traditional education, when it comes to things like that in the arts, I understand why a parent would think this is what you do because that is what you do.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's better than just practicing a lot.
Well, it's
being peer reviewed.
It's structured practicing a lot, though. Isn't it?
There is definitely a structure. Mm-hmm. But say you wanted to be a cartoonist. Would it
make... I want to be a cartoonist.
Very good. You are a cartoonist. Poof. I've done it. I've made it so, everybody.
He accepts
me. Clearly, he was already a cartoonist.
Okay, yeah.
That's actually, by the way, the trick. That's how you get people into college. Just like, I want to be a singer. I'll make you a singer. He was already a singer.
She's been singing for years.
I've made him a bit of a better singer. But like, would it make more sense for you to just every day get out the old pad?
Yeah.
Make your own comics, put them online, or go to the Joe Kubert School, you know, and learn, here's the traditions of this and structure and blah, 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 blah. But then I'm saying, like, with the drawings, you're putting them online and you're getting peer reviewed. You're getting people who do know what they're doing, or sending them out as we did.
Okay, it's a little different now because, you know, but I came up in a time when there was no internet.
During the Depression.
During the Depression.
There, you had a guy, like, you had a wheelchair full of money to get a loaf of bread.
During my Depression. No, but when I started drawing, there was no internet.
I'm sorry for laughing at your depression, but it was a funny joke. I feel bad.
Okay.
It's like when someone, it's like
okay.
when I was going to say something about cancer, but damn it, you've had cancer too. God damn, you're hard to laugh at. But like when someone makes a joke about their own.
You are allowed to laugh at cancer.
When someone makes a joke about their own cancer and you go, ha ha, and then you go, oh, oh, oh.
Yeah, should I say that?
Yeah, how long?
But if someone's joking about cancer, it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
I completely agree.
Laughing in the face of.
And I want to get completely back to the topic we're talking about, but I saw a thing on the news yesterday that just tangents me, which is they were talking about, it was something to do with mental, it was senility. And
okay.
It was like Alzheimer's. And it was like saying how we should take this seriously. People joke about it too much. We should make it something that you don't joke about, just like you wouldn't joke about cancer or AIDS or what have you.
Yeah.
To which, you know, both Pia and I, my lovely wife, turned to each other and went, of course you joke about cancer.
Yeah.
You know, we've spent an extended amount of time, like, you know, in hospice care, you know what the nurses joke about, you know what people joke about, you do because you survive and that's how you do it. Nothing is, you know, you don't get mean about it. Definitely you don't go ha ha cancer to you, but yeah.
I made a lot of jokes. Even when I had cancer, I made jokes.
Yeah, they weren't great. But no, we laughed because Dave had cancer.
Because you felt sorry for me.
Knock, knock, who's there? Tumor who?
Tomorrow never comes.
See, that's what I would have laughed at the time. Oh, that's a good one. Where's that morphine drip? Let's just turn that up a little bit.
Sleepy time.
That only makes it better.
Okay, back to your art.
But though. No, this makes you think, just for one second. Because I remember that the nurses used to love to come to the, my room where I was.
Because you were a hot guy.
And there was another guy. Well, maybe. But yeah. There was another guy in the room with me. And we were...
Good looking guy,
we
too?
We were young. Yeah, he was pretty good looking.
Firefighter?
No, no.
Different guy? Okay, yeah.
But, you know, we weren't in, like, we were joking about it. Yeah. We were okay, like, because, you know, we were stupid and young, so we didn't realize what danger we were in.
Absolutely.
We were these two guys standing on the ledge tap dancing, you know. This is great, you know. People are laughing at us while we're tap dancing. Whoa, look, I'm going to fall. Whoa, I'm not going to fall.
I don't think you were thinking this is great, but yeah.
No.
You had more confidence than one should probably have had at the time, yes.
Yeah, and so... Our room was like a pleasure to come into.
Right.
Unlike some, I'm sure, other rooms in the cancer clinic.
And once again, let me just say, two handsome guys. That's why the nurses were coming in. Let's not fool ourselves. The jokes were good. Two good-looking guys. That's what it was. And like, what are the nurses going to do? Let's go look at the old folks wing or change a couple of diapers. Or do we want to go into the handsome, jokey guy wing? Let's go in there.
Okay.
Hey, fellas, what's up? They're playing good music in here.
I guess that had something to do with it.
Maybe it had a lot to do
with anyway,
it. Maybe in retrospect, it had everything to do with it.
Let's go. So let's go back
to the
cartoonist
thing. That's why you guys, by the way, got the good medicine.
That's the stuff that worked?
Yeah.
The nurses made sure we got the stuff that
worked. You
got
the good stuff, yeah.
Let's keep those guys alive.
Listen, we got half placebos and half good stuff. We're going to give it to the handsome fellas.
Yeah, they seemed to leave when Lisa came.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
No, I'm just joking. Going back to cartooning.
Mm-hmm. Away from your sponge baths and back to this.
Away from my... I never got sponge baths.
That you know of.
I was always amazing and clean down there.
By down there, he means in the in that part of
at
town.
At the hospital.
At the hospital.
Yeah. That's what I meant. Totally.
Drawings.
Drawing. Because I was just thinking, like, you know,
or
when...
drawings, as they say
when,
in England.
When we started drawing... Mm-hmm. When we both started drawing, we had no idea. Like, what do you use to draw?
Nope.
Here's a brush.
You use to draw paper your dad brings home from work.
Yes.
And you draw on the back of it and then throw it out because it's got important numbers on the front and you really shouldn't put those in the trash.
And use whatever you had at hand, pencil, pen, Bic pen.
Usually Bic pen.
Whatever you could find. And then you just drew.
Yeah.
And it was kind of unguided. And I like it now on the internet that there are people that post process things that show what they use, show their tools, show how they ink, show what kind of ink they like to use, all those sort of things. Those are all questions that I had when I was a kid. And it's because obviously part of it is the voodoo of it that you think that will make you a better artist. If only you knew what kind of brush Will Eisner used, then you could draw like Will Eisner.
If I had the good guitar, then I could play music.
I could play like Jimmy Page.
Of course you could.
But... So yeah, that's right. If I got a Les Paul, a Gibson Les Paul, instead of this,
clearly,
you know, knockoff Les Paul, then I could play like Jimmy Page.
Right.
To be honest, if you have a Gibson Les Paul, it would make it easier to learn how to play like Jimmy Page because it is a nice guitar. It's the same thing that if you have a Winsor & Newton Series 7 brush, it will make it easier to learn to ink really nicely than if you're using some sort of knockoff brush that spreads its wings like a peacock when you put ink on it and try to draw on the paper.
Yeah, this is where it gets like, you know, but you want your time with just the pad of paper you don't care about going derp, 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 you know.
Important.
It is very important. I think your derp, derp, derp times to get to, you know, whatever. You want your shitty guitar to like, you know, so when you do move up a level, you move up a level, but you don't want to start on that. Because then it takes your excuse away, too, and you feel bad, I think.
What excuse?
I think, like, if you're starting... Say you got a Les Paul, and you're starting on a Les Paul.
Yeah.
It takes away... Where do you go from there?
Yeah.
You know? You can... you know, you want your shit guitar, and then you're like, you know, once you start getting a little bit good, you work your way up. You get a better guitar. You get a better guitar moving on.
Yeah.
You know, same with art. You want to, like, start with a pad of paper that you don't give a fuck about and toss it away.
Yeah.
And then you want to move on to the nice Bristol board.
Okay,
and, like,
that's
start
fine.
Fooling around with
but
that.
You want to know what to use, though. I mean,
eventually.
That's part of the process, right? I mean, let's assume if you are interested in what are the tools of art, then you've already done your apprenticeship.
Right.
You've already been drawing for a while.
Or you could also...
And you want to move on.
Well, let's look at someone like a Chester Brown. You know, if someone was to say to him, no, here's how you do it. You got to take the Bristol board. You got to break up the pages like this. You got to do this, that, and the other. And you know, like how he draws. The reason I'm bringing that up is he does one panel at a time on his lap, you know, in just like a little square, does that individually, and then moves on. You get someone like an Alex Robinson, you know, from what's his Too Cool to... be alive.
Too cool to be forgotten. But too I think cool he's most famous for his
box office poison.
Box office poison.
Okay, now how he does a comic.
Yeah.
You would think, like, if you're saying, how do you write a comic? Well, you write a plot line, mm-hmm. you know where the characters are going, yeah. then write up your script, then you draw your thing. And he does it one panel at a time, not knowing what's going to be the next panel.
Yeah.
Which is fucking ridiculous, except that it works for him.
It works for him.
So
exactly.
Is it better for someone like, say, like a potential Alex or a potential Chester to know online, oh, this is how you do it mm-hmm. when you're starting off?
Yeah.
Or do you want to do it the wrong way, which is your way, and then you get a choice later to find out the right way to do it and go like, you know, I like doing it this way. That's the way I prefer. Because you never get that doing it your own way if like, hey, right off the top, this is the correct way to do it.
Well, I could be wrong, but I think the way Chester does it with the individual panels then pasted onto the paper was a later development. That when he started, he worked more traditionally.
Oh, okay. I've only known him doing it that way.
And I can't speak to how Alex does it. And I mean, even if you went online and you learned all the techniques that you needed for drawing,
right.
you're not going to learn how to script unless that's something else you look up separately.
There's a lot of books on how to script.
Oh, I know what you're saying, right? But yeah. I just mean, like, if you're just interested in the arts process part of it, you're not really going to learn the writing part of
right.
it. So that's a totally separate discipline.
Yeah, it is one of those, like, is it better for you to get the video camera out, just shoot shit with your friends,
mm-hmm.
and then learn a little bit on your own, like, oh, this is what I like doing.
Yes.
Or is it better, yeah, to go to whatever the... Like, right now in high school, junior high school, they have film and TV courses, which is unbelievable to me.
Unbelievable and a little stifling, but okay.
Possibly. That's the thing. And if they teach you the correct structure,
yeah.
does that cripple the creativity of just like, here, you go out, do it your own way first,
well,
and now we'll show you how other people have done it. Here's an option of how you might want to try it that has had some success. I think when you get something in school, you don't get, this is a possible way to do math. You get, this
yeah.
is the way to do math. This is possible history. This is history.
Yeah.
And so when you get, this is how you do art, you get into that same, you want to get an A, God damn it.
Yeah.
You know, because you need your marks up or you're not going to go to college. And if you don't go to college, you're going to die of poverty in a hole in the ground and people will pee on you. That's what's going to happen, man. You know, so fuck your art.
Sounds a bit appealing. Well, it's true. Like, when
is
I...
that a pun on the word pee?
No.
Okay, good for
when...
you.
When...
If you, by the way, if you had cancer, that'd be hilarious. Not if you had cancer, it would be hilarious.
Not if you mean if I had cancer in the past, it would be hilarious? Because I did have cancer in the past.
Yeah, but you'd still have to, you'd get rid of it. So, like, okay. If you still had it.
If I still had it, it'd be
still there. That's, by the way, if you ever see Happy Days when Donnie Most says, I still got it, he is talking about herpes.
Is that what he said on it? I don't remember that.
And then everyone goes, oh, he's got herpes. It's sad. I'll laugh at him.
Poor Donnie Most.
He's got the most herpes. His head's, he's actually a blonde, but his hair's red from herpes.
From herpes. Wow.
Yeah.
That's serious.
He's got herpes simplex rouge. And you know what? He kissed Ron Howard. That's how his hair turned red. All the redheads on that show, herpes.
How many redheads were on that show?
Well,
Pinky Tuscadero.
Pinky Tuscadero.
Ron Howard's character.
Yeah. Red Fox was on that show briefly.
Red Fox?
Yeah. He's a redhead, right?
No.
Red Buttons. Red Skelton was also on that show.
Red Skelton was also on
the show? All of them. Yeah.
Okay. Red Adair.
Yeah. Rough and Ready, the Hanna-Barbera characters. They were on the show briefly. Yeah.
There was a lot of reds on that show.
Sure.
Wow.
Red Green showed up
near
the end.
Red Green
once. That was his first appearance.
Keep your hockey stick on the ice.
Sure. Keep your stick on the ice, just not your hockey stick.
Oh, he doesn't say hockey stick? Just keep your stick on the ice.
Yeah, it's a double entendre.
Is it?
He's talking about his penis because of his herpes. Got to keep it on the ice because it keeps it cold. Stops the herpes
from
hurting.
It's really warm. The rush makes you rather warm. Not that I know that personally speaking.
No.
Because I've never had herpes. I have had herbies.
Oh, is that the love bug?
Herpes, yes, exactly.
Because also herpes is also the love bug.
Exactly, herpes. Herpes go bananas. That does happen every once in a while.
When the nurses went into the herpes ward, it didn't matter how handsome the guys were.
No.
The jokes were not that funny.
It's true. And they're always, well, because the jokes weren't that funny.
Nope.
Are there very many funny herpes jokes? I guess we just made some hilarious jokes about herpes.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
You know why we made those jokes? Because we've never had it. You're trying to think of a joke now?
I used to have a herpes joke in my stand-up. I can't remember it right now. I'll remember it later. Okay, go ahead.
The perfect time. You'll mm-hmm. remember it later on. Hey, you know what I haven't said? Happy New Year.
Sorry.
By the way.
I thought of the joke.
Okay, do it.
It's really, folks, this is the explicit warning.
Okay.
Okay. There was...
Ladies and gentlemen, please turn off your children.
I'm really sorry about this, everybody. Okay. There's just no excuse. But when you're a stand-up, you got to do jokes in bars. And this is one of the jokes I did in bars. There was a guy who was before me who used to do a whole bunch of jokes about pussy farts.
Okay.
And so I went, I just think that's a rude term. Pussy farts, I mean, you should use the technical term genital burpees. That would probably be the closest thing I had to the herpes joke. Happy New Year, Dave.
Oh, thanks. Thanks a lot.
We spent New Year's together.
We did.
New Year's Eve together.
We spent New Year's Eve together.
At our friend, David and Allison's.
Yes.
And
former friend of the show, David Fine.
It's weird that you say that.
Why?
You said that like online about someone else, Mark Meir.
Yeah.
Because our friend Mark Meir just got voted best man in Edmonton.
He did.
Yeah.
Yes. Was it Edmontonian? Top Edmontonian or something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
I don't think it's best man because that
best fella in Edmonton ever.
Men, I think it was men are best in Edmonton was the actual title.
That was the title.
Yeah.
But you wrote on the thing like former friend of the show. They're not former friends of the show. They're friends of the show. Former guests.
Former guests of the show.
That's correct.
Oh, well.
But we, our friend David has access to Academy Award screeners. So we watched a movie that is currently in theaters.
Yes, we did.
And
That movie was?
That movie was I Love My Wife and I'm Going to Put Her in a Movie by Judd Apatow.
I think that's what it should be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was called Is That Enough, Honey? By Judd Apatow.
That's right.
It was called
Are You Happy Now?
By Judd Apatow. It's and you're asking like, hey, and what Judd Apatow showed up for this movie? Was it Freaks and Geeks Judd Apatow with Subtleness? Was it the guy from who's the producer of Girls? Was it that Judd Apatow? No, it wasn't that.
Wasn't that Judd Apatow?
It was the Judd Apatow that shoots the back of one person's head while another person does as many jokes as humanly possible. And then we keep cutting back to the other person's face. Reacting like a real person would talk this way.
Yeah.
And it's not just the deleted blooper reel at the end of a normal fucking movie. Yes. It's just like, you know, you're saying the same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
This is crazy, bro.
Yeah, that's what you would think they would say.
And I'm fine with that if you're doing an Anchorman movie. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, we're just in crazy goofball town.
Yeah.
That's fine.
That's fine.
And you got like a Will Ferrell just coming on to the girl and doing
everything. What was the movie called, though?
Let's just say, called This
Is 40.
This Is 40.
Yeah, This Is 40. The movie opens.
The parody name is This Is Farty. That's going to be the Wayans Brothers movie.
Okay.
Yeah. A lot of farting going on.
The movie opens with a sketch, like a Saturday Night Live sketch, about having sex in a shower and one of the people taking Viagra.
Mm-hmm.
They have a totally unconvincing argument about it.
By the way, we're going to spoil this movie for you folks.
That doesn't in any way... It's spoiling the opening.
I'm going to spoil a lot of it, probably.
Yeah. Because we don't want
There's
you to
no
see
spoiling. It goes in a goddamn circle. Nothing happens. Nothing fucking happens. No one grows.
No one does anything.
It's just fucking the same
thing. And it
has
these weird things. Like, it has... Okay, it has a sequence that goes on through the film that $12,000 is missing from the wife's store.
Okay. We're moving to that. Did you have anything else to say about your sketch off the top?
Well, I just felt like, I think I criticized the film many times during it, that it was sketch, people driving while music played so they could have a soundtrack album.
Yeah.
Sketch, people driving while music played so they could have a soundtrack album.
Back of the head while someone riffs.
And then between that is, someone riffing or something that seems vaguely scripted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but mostly it seemed like an excuse to have various people from the Apatow Players show up,
right,
riff a little bit, and then leave. So, so this whole $12,000 missing from the wife's store subplot that never resolves.
Mm-hmm.
It never resolves in the film. It's basically, I don't know, what is it, is an excuse to have her...
But they resolved it. They found out who did it.
But then what?
Nothing. I know, they really forgive it, don't they? They just let that sucker
slide. That's what I mean, but it doesn't
resolve.
What are
you going to do?
Yeah.
Ask for it back? What are you going to do?
Oxykitten.
Yeah, they just like... Yeah, yeah, it's like a big plot point. Here's the thing. You want to do a riff-a-riff-a, you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
You can have the cop show up to stop you, and you're, say, you know, high on something, and you can do all your jokes to the cop, and we go, that's good stuff.
Yeah.
But if you make that a big plot point, as in, like, now your life is ruined because of this,
it
doesn't work. You got to take your riff area away from your plot area. It does not work. So, yeah, you're right. A major plot thing
gets
resolved.
We have this family who are in financial trouble.
Right.
That's established. They're in financial trouble. The husband's job is work isn't working out very well.
Right.
And her store is missing a lot of money.
Right.
And so they're in financial trouble. And then we hilariously discover that someone who's taking it is also a drug addict.
Right. Basically, Foster Brooks. It goes from straight to Foster Brooks with no stopping. Just,
I don't like him. Take the Oxycontin. Roxymapotin? Or hippopotamus?
Meanwhile,
oh, well, you're hilarious. We'll forget about the 12 grand.
That's right. And meanwhile, the actress just keeps a straight face during a 5-minute long sequence. Goes nowhere.
Yep.
And then it cuts to a different scene that
fantastic.
Will also probably go nowhere.
Right.
Or how about the distant dad?
Let's just hammer through this. Okay. Folks, this is 40ing to the end of this fucking thing. Okay. By the way, thanks to David and Allison for letting us watch their movie.
Yeah.
We enjoyed the company. We enjoyed
it. Had a great time. We played Taboo. That was lots of fun.
Lots of fun. We had a great evening.
Had a great deal.
We
had a great meal.
That's right.
And some wonderful food.
Some people in the room enjoyed the film, and that's absolutely fine. And there's
some people left.
And there's parts, that some people stormed out, and we were in a plane. What? No, that's not what happened at all. That makes no sense at all.
We were flying around the world so we could celebrate New Year's Eve as often as possible.
Right. Okay. Well, let's go. Okay. So you've got we're going to go all over the map with this. The wife's plot, which is money is being missing from the store.
Yeah.
They also go with the store's not doing great.
Yeah.
Okay. That's your plot, buddy.
Yeah.
That's your plot was just like, hey, he's following his dream, which is not working out.
Mm-hmm.
She's following her dream, which is not working out.
Yeah.
One of you has to, or both of you have to, realistically change your fucking dream.
Yeah.
You know, instead what they do is they go, hey, he's giving money to someone in his family.
Yeah.
And she's having money stolen from the store. You're missing the goddamn point. You're missing the goddamn point. And if the point is we've got to find out.
They do agree they should sell their house at the end of the film.
Good, because it's an enormous fucking house.
Yes,
this is the other problem. Here's the thing. There's just your general me problems. Okay, and fair enough. Couples have the thing, but the two big real problems they hammer through are one, we're financially fucked.
Yeah,
and yet they live like the richest people in the world.
Yeah,
they got a big car, they got an enormous house, they got a pool, they got everything. They got two big businesses that both don't seem to be working.
That swallow money.
Right. Okay. Well,
Put $12,000 on my card.
Right.
He says at one point.
Trim it down then a bit. Maybe that's the problem. So it's tough as a human to watch this and go, I relate to them. I hope things work out for them.
Gee, this is real life.
Yeah, this is real life. At one point you were rich as fuck, I guess. And that's fair. But, they don't really do anything with that. That's weird. And then two, it starts off with, hey, we're turning 40. We better get in shape. Okay, all we've seen off the top is these guys are fit as fuck. They look great. They look great.
Yeah, they look
fine. She's with a trainer, and they keep hammering the point that she's doing great with this trainer.
Yeah.
She's never been in better shape.
Yeah.
He's bragging about her.
Yeah.
And the Paul Rudd character, for all she's going, stop eating
the cupcakes.
Well,
Chrissy's bragging about how good she looks. She's the director's wife.
I know, so they have to do that. And then you got your Paul Rudd, who doesn't have an inch of belly on him, who's like in his bike club where he just goes and works out. They do nothing, these people, but work the fuck out. And the plot line on that is, we better get in shape. No, you're fine. That base covered, too. We got financial problems. Yeah, a little bit, but right now, real problems.
They also have two atrocious children.
Do they? Here's the thing, you're right, you're being sarcastic and well done.
No, those children were atrocious.
Were they? You have childs. I looked at them, and what I felt was the director could not make the children bad enough to justify the children being bad and having a plot where the children are bad because they're really his children.
Well,
and
I just
obviously
mean
he's basing these on real life things, and you can't take your 8-year-old and go hey, this is an asshole thing my 8-year-old fucking says. Hey, do that douchebag thing you do at home.
No,
you can't do
the
that.
The little girl was fine. The older girl who is obviously supposed to be like the troubled teen or whatever. The way she spoke to her parents.
Oh, the one.
This is absolutely. Oh, it's more than that. Just the whole movie. Her whole tone of voice to the entire film is just
okay. But the
horrible.
There's a scene where the girl says "fuck you, fuck you, fuck you" to the parents.
Yeah.
But the whole thing about that is
they deserved it.
They deserved it because that's all they've been doing in front of the kid.
And you don't see them with the children.
Which also makes that scene not about the kid but about the parents.
Yeah.
So it's like even that doesn't have any weight because it's just like we got to get our act together. No, she needs attention. She's screaming for attention, and you're not going to give it to her. Because that's not what this movie is, because you're too selfish fucks.
There's a scene where the daughter is watching Lost, the final episode of Lost on her iPad. She's throughout the film, she's been watching all of Lost.
Right.
So she's at the last, she's watching the last show. She has 5 minutes left, and he makes her turn off the iPad. Like, what kind of stupid parenting is that? Is this like how to handle everything wrong?
Yeah.
Like, 5 minutes. Like, who cares, for one thing? If she had said, I've got 50 minutes left, then maybe there's a case to be made for,
or
well,
two
listen.
Episodes left or something.
Yeah. Then you say to her, listen, you know, we'll have plenty of time to watch that later. Like, I promise I'll make time for you to watch it later on.
Right.
But he doesn't even say that. It's just bullying parenting, like the worst thing you could do. And it just seemed like everything they
did was
wrong.
Is that supposed to, though, in the film? Are you supposed to see? Okay. Now, as a person who's a human being, you're watching you're watching that scene.
Yes.
Dad comes in.
As a father.
There's a party going on outside. He's trying to bring the girl to the party.
Well, the party's going to happen. So he's trying to get her to get ready for the party.
Understood. Yeah. 5 minutes left. Yeah. Are we supposed to then be on his side? I mean, just Judd Apatow.
I think we were supposed to be on his
side.
Yeah,
I'm not on his side.
No, me neither.
Not at all.
Like, I just felt like when that scene was over, I turned to my wife and I said, "Well, he just handled that all wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all wrong. Like, what? Why are we watching this?
Is the angle on that supposed to be? Again, we're spoiling movies. Like, one of the early scenes is he's playing Scrabble.
We're not spoiling the movie. There's no way to spoil the movie.
Scrabble in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Which kind of bugged me because in the trailer, it was Words with Friends.
Oh.
And it changed to Scrabble.
Guess they couldn't get permission.
I guess someone got a little couple. No, not permission. Oh, really? Do you think they were trying to get Words with Friends? They couldn't get it, so they went with Scrabble?
Oh, I
no,
see.
Sir.
Words with Friends looked at the movie and said, we don't want anything to do with this.
No, nothing to do with that. They finally got Scrabble. And Scrabble went, yeah, we'll do it. And
oh,
so they went.
Okay.
So I went, oh, you got Coke when you had Pepsi.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Okay. But the whole thing is he takes his iPad. I assume they have more than one iPad.
Yeah, they seem to have a few of them floating around the house. Because, you know, they're so
rich,
there's so much
rich as fuck.
They have so many economic problems.
So he goes into the bathroom, which has no lock on the door, and the wife slams it open, like, what are you doing in here?
Yeah.
Taking too long to poop. Or whatever the fuck.
And then she wants to see it. It's a hilarious scene.
Okay. You know what? If you're the little girl who wants to watch Lost, go in the bathroom. Go in the bathroom. I don't think Dad's going to walk in on the little girl in the bathroom and go, like, wrap it up.
Well, he shouldn't walk in her anyway. She's in her bedroom.
That's a good point.
She's in her bedroom enjoying something.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
okay, here's the thing.
Get over yourself.
It really, here's what it was. It was a jerk parade. They're both
they're both
jerks, and we're supposed to, because they're attractive, I think, go, they're just like us.
Oh, yeah.
They're just like,
I'm just watching this movie, and this is what it felt like when I turned 40. Oh, boy. Just think of that time when I was having sex in the shower on Viagra.
Now,
and my wife got mad at me because I had to take Viagra to have sex with her.
Okay, here's the... Okay. Remind me about what Judd can talk about and what he can't talk about anymore, because I want to talk about that.
Okay.
But like, here's my problem with that scene. The opening... it just means like you're not watching your own fucking movie. The opening scene has them having sex in the shower.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to go, ooh, racy.
Yeah.
This is going to be a racy movie. No, it's not. It's not going to be a racy movie. This is the last of this you're going to see. You might see like one nipple at some point, but they're going to be having a mammogram or something.
You know? No, later on she tries to come on to him.
Unfortunately, we've seen it already and we're like, no big surprise.
Yeah.
So they're like...
I didn't have to leave the room.
They're having sex, and she's like, and he mentions that he took Viagra, and she gets mad at him for that.
Yes,
which is weird.
Yep,
weird.
And it's really, and it feels fake, and it feels forced.
Well, because
so they have this long arc, long Saturday Night Live argument.
It's a play on the old. You had to look at porn. What am I not enough for you?
Yeah.
But he can't do that because he's too clean for that.
Okay,
he's too clean. So he's got to go. What's she getting mad that she's not attractive enough about? Oh, he's got to take Viagra. Gotcha. Okay, but he makes a thing about like you saw how it was different, and she was like, I knew it was different. But then later in the movie, he yells at her, I've been taking it for 2 weeks.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now are we supposed to go like, have you not had sex for 2 weeks and you've just been taking it every night and it's not been happening? Or has she just not noticed for 2 weeks?
Because he says it in the shower though, right?
Yeah. He says it
in
the shower.
I'm sure glad I took Viagra.
Right. Because it's so different this time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not different because he's been taking it for two weeks.
Yeah.
So you didn't even watch your own goddamn movie.
Yeah.
So it's...
Well, he's been walking around the house for 2 weeks with an unattended boner.
I guess... Are we supposed to think that?
Yeah.
Like, because it even seems like they're having sex all the time. Like, what's the goddamn fucking problem? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Here's what I think Judd Apatow can joke about. I think Judd Apatow had a bad childhood.
Okay.
He was, like, bullied. And he was, like, awkward and socially weird.
Mm-hmm.
And so if he's doing a movie about that... Gold. He's fine.
Yeah.
Even if it's an adult, even if he's doing like the 40-year-old virgin.
Okay. But to me, the 40-year-old virgin has all of these sins that we're talking about in this film.
Does it?
Yeah, to me.
I think the thing...
It feels forced and fake. to me.
Okay, here's what I think about the... Okay, but let me just finish the point about
Judd
Apatow.
Let's talk about this.
But if you try to then go, you know what marriage is like now? What do you mean? Well, you know how you got your 5 iPads and your 2 businesses are just going so-so and you're losing $80,000 to your dad while you're losing $12,000 over here.
Riding your $1,500 bicycle.
And that makes your wife a little annoyed because maybe you're going to have to trim down your expenses a bit and you're having sex once a week.
Yeah.
But like she's all like, oh, why do you have to take the Viagra while we're having sex in our 17 bathrooms? And then you have your pool party where, you know, her prostitute friend shows up and then your friends are flirting with him. And then your daughter, she wants to watch the last 5 minutes of a thing. Yeah. You don't want to let her, right? Everyone can relate to this, huh? No, we can't. You have no problems. Like, I understand inside, internally, everyone's got, you know, no matter, there's people in heaven right now who are going, ugh, you know, I get it. That's just human nature. But if it's a movie, brother, you got to show us something that's wrong. Yeah. Have a scorpion bite you at some point. You can't just have someone, you know, they literally have to do what they did at the end of 40-Year-Old Virgin, which is, I'm going to go out on a bike and get hurt. Like, we've got to end up in the hospital somehow.
Yeah.
Because we've got to have some reason to make a tender moment because I haven't built enough stock up to pay anything off by the end.
No, because the movie is totally flat.
Right.
It's totally emotionally flat because no one ever does anything that's realistic.
Mm-hmm.
So you never have a time in the film where you go, oh, how true, or oh, I really feel what's going
kind.
On.
Or kind. No one does anything kind. And I think that's the difference between this and 40-Year-Old Virgin. Where 40-Year-Old Virgin works to me is when he goes to the... whatever the sex meeting with the woman's daughter,
okay.
and the girl has asked something and she's embarrassed and she's and people are starting to laugh at her, and then he pipes up and he takes the bullet and he asks a question, and now the laughter's on him, and all of a sudden you go like, oh, he's a decent guy, he's taking a bullet for someone who might be his daughter later, and you go like, oh yeah, he's kind,
yeah,
you know, he's not just a horny guy who's wanting to get laid because that's every 80s movie.
Yeah.
he actually does things through the movie that are kind for other people. And then his friends, even though they laugh at him, are actually trying to do nice things for him. So there is actually a little bit of that's a good motivation to then hang your yuckity yucks on. Whereas this one, it's asshole and partner and vapid kids.
Yeah.
And then everyone's crackers, bananas, crazy cameo. Mm-hmm. Man, this looks like it was fun to be on this set.
Yeah.
You know, I was reading an article today in GQ where it was going, Apatow sets are the most fun sets. I bet they are.
Yeah, there's apparently no script that you have to follow.
Yeah, just call a movie blooper reel.
Come on,
I'm sure the DVD extras are hilarious on this.
Let's bring on, what's it, Melissa...
McCarthy?
Yeah, Melissa McCarthy.
Yeah, she's hilarious. She's got an improv background.
Bring her on and she can make jokes about driving a truck over people and ranting and raving for a while for no particular reason.
Now that's
and then the actress can have her moment of, what's the lady's name who did Bridesmaids?
Oh, Kristen Wiig?
Yeah, Kristen. She can have her Kristen Wiig moment and insult a kid and have a long rant at the kid. Like,
this is where this gets weird, that scene. Like, okay, here's what happens. The parents go on to the iPad, and iPod must have paid them some money, and are looking at the...
One of their 6 or 7 iPads in the house.
Yeah, there's a couple of weird things here. Okay, in that it looks like they're on Twitter or something, and they're reading her messages.
Yeah.
Which anyone can publicly read, by the way. Like, the whole thing is like, somehow you got on and were able to read my stuff, and that's my personal stuff. On Twitter, it is not. If they got onto your Facebook...
She's probably still at AOL, the girl.
I think she's SOL. And they're reading it, and there's a little... a kid gets mean to her. But again, it's Judd Apatow mean, not, you're a fucking skank slut, as would be life.
Yeah.
It's just like, I made a hot or not list. No, you didn't. No, you did not. Kids did not make that now. No, no, no one made it. It's not even Mary Fuck Kill.
Yeah.
It's just like a hot or not list, and she's not on it. Okay, the mildest thing in the world. So mild. If it was a pepper, grandma wouldn't notice it. It's nothing, nothing. And then the wife sees the kid who did this at school go shit nuts on the guy.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, well, fuck you.
Oh,
up.
It's a hilarious scene.
Okay, so you're almost
hilarious.
Like, yeah, all right. So Mama Bear goes after that.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, that's a weird scene.
Yeah,
okay,
that's awkward.
That's awkward and too comedically over the top because we're also getting the back of the head, which you get, and then because it goes into crazy funny. We're like, that should not go into crazy funny.
No.
Okay, but then Melissa McCarthy confronts her, and you know what? Melissa McCarthy is right. she's right to confront her because she just threatened their kid with death.
Yeah.
And you know what? Hey, I don't know what the school system is like now in America, but I don't think you can fucking do that. So they're then they have a principal's scene. After they have another comedy back of the head scene where they're both going nuts.
Yeah.
Now we're going to take this to the principal's office and we're going to have more of this fucking shit.
Don't forget that there's a scene between her and Paul Rudd, between Melissa McCarthy and Paul Rudd. They have a crazy scene.
Oh, right. They got a crazy fucking scene.
So you have three different crazy scenes.
Oh, no, Dave.
And then you go to the principal's office.
Okay, then they go to the principal's office.
Yeah.
Crazy fucking scene. Yeah. There, it's wacky time.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the movie.
It's a long riff.
And then at the end of the movie, did you have enough of that? You didn't?
Oh.
Let's throw it over the credits.
Yeah, that's.
There's more, folks.
She riffed for 15 minutes on this. Can you believe it?
Son of a fuck. What are you talking about? Oh, my God. Stop it. Okay.
Yeah.
So, again, I'm not a parent. So maybe my perspective on it was, but as a fella in his 40s,
mm-hmm.
who has the same amount of girls as the people in the movie,
okay,
you live in a house,
yes,
like the people in the movie,
not very much like it, but okay,
but
I do live in a house.
It is a house,
yes.
People in the movie, could you relate to this movie?
No, I could not. But the thing is, I could not relate to it from the very beginning of the film. It starts off on the wrong foot,
having sex in the shower, standing up.
It feels forced. It's not funny. There's this argument between them that feels completely forced and doesn't reveal anything of their characters, does not give you any idea of what the film's going to be about.
Mm-hmm.
Like right away, mm-hmm. you have no idea. Like everything else that's revealed in the film, you should at least get a sense of who those characters are in that first scene. That's what this introductory scene should be, right?
Right.
Introducing us to their personalities. Yeah, sets a tone, sets their personalities.
You should know everything about the characters in the first 10 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, so then you know, this is how they're going to be throughout the film.
Right.
Rather than completely changeable, like silly putty, and constantly change their personality.
Right.
Scene to scene. And I mean, it's just stuff like...
She doesn't want to age. That's her thing. She
yes.
does not like to get older.
Yeah. So
that's her angle.
So we get not one, but two scenes where she dances funny.
Mm-hmm.
We get two funny, sexy dance scenes from her. Because obviously, director's wife.
And our angle on her is supposed to be she's vain.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the angle?
I don't know.
I think it is. I think it's she doesn't want to age.
Oh, that's right. Because she lies about her age.
She lies about her age.
And we get that
to her doctor.
We get that hilarious scene in the doctor's office as if they wouldn't know exactly how old she is.
And everyone just walks in and it's crazy.
It's crazy.
Of course they know.
Because there's three different dates she's given them. Oh, my God. The confusion.
Well, that's a weird thing, too. It's they have this montage where everyone's getting medical exams. Like, there's five medical exams in a row, including dental.
And a mastectomy. Or not a mastectomy, but a what do they call it? Where they
mammogram.
Mammogram.
Yeah.
Mastectomy.
Gets a mastectomy. And they play it for comedy. It's very weird.
They show it as well.
Yeah.
Lop.
Okay, coming up. Tits up. It's just mean. So, they do that. And you're like, oh, well, you guys have great insurance. So clearly they got insurance or they're rich as fuck.
Yeah.
And so, you know what? Your doctor can see what your age is on your insurance form.
Yeah.
Because you can't lie on the insurance form.
You don't need to make a rings joke.
But let me just go. Yeah, you count the rings. Son of a fuck. So how many jokes did that guy playing the gynecologist, have to do into her spread legs before they went, that's the keeper? Because you know they riffed a bunch.
Yeah.
Hello, at your cervix. You know, just all that. So anyway, labia, have you met labia? Labia the tattooed labia. So, all right,
okay.
Quit lipping off to me.
These lips are sealed.
So anyway, that reminds me, my kids just saw the Muppet movie. It was great. So, found my keys. Lots of... Wait for the blooper reel.
That's right.
Okay, but let's just go character-wise. So, off the top, you're supposed to, one, like the characters and also see their flaws.
Yes.
That's what you want. You want to be, it's that guy, but he's got that. You know, he's Steve Carell.
Because the movie has to have an arc to it.
Steve Carell, he's a kind-hearted guy, but he can't get laid.
Yeah.
He's just too shy. All right, gotcha. Now, in this film... We've met these folks.
And in order to get laid, you have to completely change who you are entirely 180 degrees.
Yeah, that's an old...
I just don't like that. That's a part of the film I don't like. Can't get the ladies? You should take all the hair off your chest. What?
Yeah, because you want that. But the heart of a Judd Apatow movie is, it's the most straight-laced movie you can get, but I'm going to wrap it in swears.
Okay.
It's a little bit like Kevin Smith movies, in that, he's as straight-laced as you can get.
Yeah.
When it comes down to it, but I'm going to cover it in swears and gay jokes and blowjob jokes throughout. Yeah. And you won't notice that what I'm really saying is, hey, listen, you know, you all should get married and have kids.
We got to be nice to each other.
Yeah, and we got to not even get, no one's nice to each other, but you've got responsibilities, buddy, and you better suck it up, and you better never watch porn, and you better, you know, get your shit together.
Really?
A little bit. Like, I know the Seth Rogen character.
I got to delete a lot of stuff from my computer.
Well, here, okay.
Luckily it's here.
I want it. I hope you folks are okay with this discussion. But this is a lot that I've been thinking about, and I need to get all this off my chest. When I watched Knocked Up, it's a very weird...
I did not see that film, I have to say.
Okay. Well, this is where the characters are introduced.
Okay.
And she in that, the wife in that, is a shrew of the damned. Like, he cannot do anything right. Okay. And he's the poor, long-suffering, ooh, guy, this baby, I wish I could love, oh, baby. And
go home and read my bird books.
She thinks that he is having an affair.
Oh.
But he is not. He is just in a fantasy baseball league.
Ah.
And so you're like, oh, that's nice. He wasn't cheating on her like she thought he was.
Yeah.
Wrongo, bongo. She gets mad at him because the lie is enough. And like, maybe there's something to be said for that.
Yeah.
But this guy is just trying to escape the hellscape
of this.
It's just the worst. You know, she just like, I want you here all the goddamn time and I'm so full of fucking need.
Yeah.
And arr, it's this.
Remember when we started the show and I said everyone needs some private space in their life?
Yeah.
That's why.
To take a dump and play your Scrabble game.
Exactly.
So, like, when you first
or even pretend to take a dump.
So, in that movie, it establishes that.
Yeah.
So, I'm like, oh, we're gonna get another level to it in this movie. Wrong. It's like right off the top, she's throwing the doors open and the guy can't take a poop. And you know, and just like, okay.
You feel for him at that point.
You don't just feel for him. You're just like, he needs to get out of here.
Yeah.
Like, this is misery. Like, I mean, like Kathy Bates' Misery Time. She's cuckoo bananas and you need to grab those girls and fuck off.
Yeah.
Like, you need to run from her. She's crackers. Crackers. Go. And at one point, you know, in this movie, he goes, you know, she goes, you're a dick. And he goes, I am kind of a dick. I'm like, okay, it's nice to say that, but I need to see something in the movie where you show me him being a dick. Yeah. I do see him lying to her, but like, as he says in the movie, because she's crazy. So you don't, when talking to the crazy guy on the back of the bus waving a knife, tell him the truth, the whole truth, like, hey, you fucking think I'm crazy? It's like,
no.
No, sir, yeah. I do not. Why are you lying to me? You know, it's like, no, because you're a crazy guy waving a knife around. That's why.
That's right. That brings out the liar.
Yeah, because you know where I sleep and, you know.
On the bus.
And they have the old talk about like how they'd murder each other. I'm like, okay, there's a way of doing a scene like that and making it work, but you need to earn that scene by realism. And so when you go into this crazy land,
and there's a feeling, there's an affection there that rides you through that kind of morbid talk, but there's no affection.
Yeah.
So it just feels like horrible.
And they seem to fall back in love with each other every so often, but they don't seem to earn it. We never see that trip to that. And then it goes from 0 to 10 and just like, I hate you again. I'm like, okay, I get that this might be your life. As a movie, you've got to fill in those blanks.
There was a couple of scenes that I liked.
Yeah. Oh, no, there's stuff in there to laugh at.
I liked the scene at the record label company office place where they get an argument over expenses and things like that. Like, I enjoyed that. That was actual emotion that made sense in the film.
Right.
And was played properly. And wasn't played dumb.
Okay.
It wasn't played for dumb, right?
Right?
It was an actual argument that had comedy in it.
Yep.
Because it was exasperated.
Was this complaining about the sign on the wall that cost $30,000 and only faces indoors?
That's right.
Yeah, so no one sees it.
That's right. But it works, right? Because it's a good joke. And it works. It's not just dumb riffing, right? He's not just going, you know, you spend too much money. Or you spend too much money. Too much cash. Too much lucre.
That scene, to me, there's a couple of angles to go on of that. One, why do you have the sign inside?
Is
it because you're vain? If the whole thing is about vanity, that'd be interesting because she's vain physically. You're vain how? You need to feel you're young and in touch with music. Maybe that's how you feel that you're young and
you're,
and maybe the deal is both of them are grabbing onto youth so much that they're not able to enjoy life because they want the past more than they want the present, which would be a theme for a movie. Maybe you can use that theme sometime in a movie. Okay. but the whole thing about like, he spent $30,000 on this sign.
Yes.
And then he's got these two employees. I don't know how the business is doing aside from you've hired this one guy. Was your business successful in the past? Have you had better days?
You hired this guy who apparently is incompetent.
Right.
Because there's nothing that he does that succeeds.
Okay.
Right?
But then there's nothing that Paul Rudd does that succeeds either.
Remember, he convinces him. He says, I can't promote Graham Parker if we don't have the rumor here.
Mm-hmm.
And so then Paul Rudd's character says, fine. Spend the $12,000, bring them here, put it on my Amex. When you're thinking to yourself, I thought this guy was broke.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how come he has a card that has $12,000 of room on
Amex,
it?
Amex kind of works that way sometimes.
No. Amex does not work that way.
No, I've had Amex cards. Like, if you got a business card, you can have it, like, go to the moon. Just got to pay it off immediately or you're fucked.
Yeah. Okay. So that's fine. So that means it's going to work out now, right? Because this guy said, if you bring the rumor, then I will be able to promote the band.
Right.
So then they have Graham Parker playing with the rumor. They do the wrong song, by the way. They're better songs they could have done. But anyhow, okay. They do a song, and then and no one's there. And he says, well, where is it? He says to this guy who told him that he says, well, where are all the reporters? Oh, I couldn't get them to come. What do you mean you couldn't get them to come? You said that if I spent $12,000 to bring the rumor over, then you could promote this, and now you can't. Why am I still working? Why are you still working for me? You should be gone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is this one of those weird...
And he should then fire him.
Yeah.
Like, that's the point in the movie where you should go, like, I'm going to fire you.
Yeah.
Like, you want to see in a movie, like, the problems are clearly lined up in the movie of, like, what would solve your problems?
Yes.
Aside from leaving your wife. What would solve your problems? And it's like, none of those things are done by the end, and then the movie ends. And you're like, okay. So, No,
they do agree they should sell their house.
Yeah, they're not going to. They're not going to.
That's probably true.
Next time you see them, they'll be in that same fucking house.
Yeah.
They don't need to sell their house. They need to stop giving money to dad. Yeah. They need to prosecute the girl who stole all that money from them. You know?
Yes.
I mean, that's a certain amount of money, like, on its own.
Yeah.
Like, you never know, like, how bad they're at. Like, they're just like, things are bad. But, like, rich people bad or, like, what people bad?
Yeah.
Like, here's the thing. They've got rich people problems and attractive people problems.
Yeah.
And no real regular person problems. And you can do that. You can make that. And that's a Woody Allen movie. A Woody Allen movie is people that are rich as fuck, living in New York, going to the fanciest restaurants, ordering the most expensive wine, and going, oh, I'm miserable.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's fine. You can pull that off.
Mm-hmm.
The guy's been pulling it off for dozens of years. But if you're going like, and this is a film for everybody, huh? Nope. Not at all.
Yeah.
It's just like, what's it like being rich and a little bit and not dealing with any of your problems?
Yeah.
Boo. That's what I say.
I think we agree.
Okay. You should watch Knocked Up.
I should?
Yeah.
I don't think I want to.
Well, I think you should just to talk about it.
Oh, okay. Okay, maybe I will. Maybe it's on Netflix. I'll try and catch it.
Yeah. Oh, you got Netflix now. That's right.
That's right. I've been watching Pride and Prejudice every night. That's all I'm watching.
What's the appeal to Pride and Prejudice?
What's the appeal for me?
Yeah.
Well, it's my favorite book.
Okay.
Right? So I love that. It's my favorite, all-time favorite book.
And
I've read it many times.
And they pull it off as a film? Do they think it represents the book truly?
I have never seen it before. This is the 2005 with Keira Knightley.
This is not the Muppets version.
This is not the Muppets version. No, that's right. We're both trying to think of a pun title for a Muppets version of Pride and Prejudice.
Oh, are we?
I was trying, but I couldn't. So, I was trying to find. You can keep thinking. I'll talk. You think.
Rolf and Prejudice.
I
can do more vagina jokes.
Like, because there's a great version from the 30s, I believe it's from the 30s. That was co-written by Aldous Huxley.
Right.
Stars Laurence Olivier as Darcy, mm-hmm. the love interest, and had a kind of a pill. I can't remember the actress's name now. As in the Elizabeth Bennet role, she's sort of the heroine of the film.
Right.
Then there are a couple different productions from BBC. The most famous being the one with Colin Firth as Darcy.
Okay, yeah.
And that one's
That's the one the ladies I know like.
That's a very. It's very good.
Yeah,
it's very good.
That's the reason Colin Firth is in all the movies.
Yeah, the early black and white one has very good actors and filling a lot of the roles in the film.
Right. The original role of Lord Darcy was played by Fatty Arbuckle before the
Troubles. Yes, that's right. The silent version. Colin Firth does not beat Laurence Olivier as Darcy. As yet, no one has beat Laurence Olivier.
You have not seen either of these, though.
No, I have.
Oh,
Colin Firth one.
Okay.
I just hadn't bothered to watch the 2005 one because I thought, like, come on, surplus to requirements. We don't need another Pride and Prejudice.
That's right.
But actually, it was very good. It was very successful. And I have to say that Keira Knightley, thus far, is my favorite Elizabeth.
All right.
I thought she'd really captured the role
I'm
well.
I'm going to try to watch this.
Don't try to watch it. Fucking watch it.
Okay. Like, listen. All right, Yoda. All right, sweary Yoda. I like this. It starts off with, like, I don't like swearing. Hey, fuck you by the end.
We can occasionally swear. I'm not saying I don't
I know.
Swear.
We need to use our explicit warning. We
I drive. I have to swear all the time. As a driver, yeah. Swearing comes naturally to driving.
Because cars become an extension of your body.
That's right. And people are always trying to crash into your body. So
that's
you
right.
Know,
you which get is weird when you give me a ride and you go, get in me. And I'm like, what?
Well, I just say, get in my arse. Right?
Did you have that loaded up, or have you used that joke before?
Oh, I had that loaded up.
From a year and a bit ago when we started the podcast. That's right. Wait till he brings up the car. Wait till he brings up the car. Podcast is done.
There we go. We can end it now. Episode 57, the last episode of Sticky Dragon.
Well, we can wrap up the podcast itself, like, as in this episode.
Yeah, I think we should wrap it up now.
Yeah.
We're done.
Because we got, like, sandwiches to go eat.
Next week, we'll talk about Pride and Prejudice, because I'm going to bring it up again.
Okay. All right. And somehow it will relate to This Is 40. It's yeah. Judd Apatow's Pride
we
and Prejudice.
Should.
So much riffing.
Wow,
so
we
much...
should. We should. Yeah, we'll talk about it next week. I'm going to write it down.
Okay. If you get a chance to watch Knocked Up, you know.
I'll give it a go.
Give it a go. Yes. Hey, listen, you're Seth Rogen's.
He's good.
He tries
he's
hard.
He's good.
And he succeeds a lot of the time. Yeah.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Keira Knightley. Not Keira Knightley.
Catherine Heigl?
Heigl.
Yeah.
She got a little bit of trouble for saying the film was sexist, and the guys did not like that. And
oh, really?
They acted actually kind of sexist towards her after she mentioned the film was sexist. They got really attacky and mean
really?
And bullyish. Actually. Got a little weird. Wow. So that is one of the reasons, apparently, that she is not in this movie,
even though
it's a spinoff.
Yeah. Or Seth Rogen isn't either. So,
but it's tough. Well, you couldn't put Seth Rogen in, because if you put Seth Rogen in, you go, where's the girl?
Yeah.
Where's she at? And it's like,
What I got to say is, for both of them, they're lucky they weren't in this film.
Did it do okay?
This Is 40?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah. He was wearing his heart on his sleeve. I love Freaks and Geeks so much that I still wish Judd Apatow the best. I enjoyed the Vanity Fair issue he edited. Real good interviews with Nichols and May and Albert Brooks. Okay. And
Of course, Albert Brooks, he's in This Is 40. It's called cross promotion, sir.
Right. Albert Brooks is having a good year.
I like Albert Brooks.
You saw Drive, right?
Oh, yeah.
Albert Brooks and Drive.
He's good in Drive. Broadcast News.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
We can Taxi Driver.
We can list a whole... What? Is he in Taxi
Driver? Yeah, he's in Taxi Driver.
Oh, I did not know that.
There you go. Wow. He works in the office. He works on the election with Cybill Shepherd's character.
And quite good in Finding Nemo.
He's also very good in his dramatic role in Finding Nemo.
Pretty dramatic off the top.
It is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know... Loses the mom.
Wait, I saw it.
There's a number of people who cut that opening off of their film when the kids watch it, because they don't want to see that sad
Never did.
Scene.
Never did.
No, you don't care about your children, though.
I do care about my children. That's why I don't hide things from them.
Oh, we could talk about that. I want to just see the back of your head, and I'll just riff on that for a while. We'll do it Judd Apatow style.
All right. I'll turn around.
Thanks so much for listening. If you want to hear more of my yapping, why not listen to the podcast I'm going to listen to, which is called Funny Enough.
Funny Enough?
I think it's called Funny Enough.
Okay.
Art Factora and Patrick Maliha. And that's, I believe, maybe they're on iTunes. I don't know.
I'm sure they're on iTunes.
Listen, on the Facebook page for Sneaky Dragon, I put a link up.
There okay.
On the 15th, I said the 10th last week, and I was wrong. Sideswipe is coming to the Stormcrow Tavern, which is my improv / board game show / thingamabob. So there's that. Go do that.
Sure.
And end of the month, on some sort of day, once again, look on Facebook, we got the Critical Hit shows coming back. We missed a month, but we're coming back. Oh,
it's
there
January
you.
30th.
Oh, the poster is on my computer. Well done at the Rio Theater. And the Irrelevant Show starts this week.
Oh.
It's a new season.
Okay.
And first sketch up is a sketch I wrote. So,
oh, okay. Well, I'll listen to that
sketch
for sure.
Of mine that's in there. If there's a scene about a doctor and a scene about Kung Fu, you're listening to Sketches I Wrote, the Irrelevant Show.
Okay.
CBC Radio or the internet.
Nice.
And so anything for this year? Any resolutions? Anything you're going to be doing this for the entire year? What are your plans for the year?
I have resolved to go to the gym.
Mm-hmm. And yell at people.
And yell at people. No, this is the worst time of year to go to the gym.
Terrible.
This is the worst time.
Absolutely.
It's all the people who are there for a month,
mm-hmm.
following their New Year's resolution.
Yeah.
They doggedly pursue it, usually a good 2 to 3 weeks. By the time 3 weeks is up, everyone is gone and it's back to the same old faces.
And at this point you can tell because they're all sweating gravy. It's just working that out.
Well, that's what I need to go for. I haven't been for a while because I blew my knee, so... My knee is in terrible shape.
Oh, no.
I have water on it, so.
Oh, God. I hate that I'm doing one more tangent, but okay. Here's the thing. Speaking of, like, more gravy than grave, you know that Scrooge thing?
Yeah.
Okay. Here's something that's I just realized bothers me about the Christmas Carol story.
Oh, my God.
I'm sorry. Just really quick.
Okay.
So Scrooge, he's seeing all the stuff, and he's like, oh, my life, oh, my life.
Yeah.
And then the final is like Ghost of Christmas Future, and it's like, there's this guy who's dead.
Yeah.
And, oh, by the way, Tiny Tim's not doing great. Okay, all right, good to know. But then what really makes him lose it is, look at this grave.
Yeah.
Look at this grave. It's you. He's an old man. He's in Victorian England.
He knows he's going to die.
He knows he's going to die. Yeah. What the fuck? Yeah. That's the big thing. It was just like, hey, by the way, old man. You will die at some point. I'm not saying when. I'm just the Ghost of Christmas freaking future. You know, but it's like,
I don't think it's his death that bothers him.
What bothers him? That no one will like him?
Yeah.
He knows that. He knows people don't like him.
No,
Does he expect he's going to have a big funeral?
I don't think he thinks people don't like him. But okay. I think he knows people don't like him, but he thinks people respect him.
Well,
right?
He saw Marley die, right? Like, he saw Marley go.
Yeah.
Now, how goes Marley, so goes Scrooge. So, like, he's been through this. Marley has died.
Yeah.
You know what Marley's funeral was like? It's going to be like your funeral, buddy. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it's going to be like.
Yeah.
So, what's the
That's
big...
That's hard for us to face.
Well,
we don't...
Well, I get that it's hard to face, but it's not the big twist.
People, human beings aren't notoriously honest to themselves.
The guy points to the grave.
Yeah.
It's his name on it.
Yeah.
That's it. Ah!
He falls.
Like, one, how does he not know that that's what it is?
Yeah. But remember.
Yeah.
Remember.
Yeah.
This isn't the first thing that happens in the story.
I gotcha.
This
right.
is at the end. After he's gone through this transformative
All
thing.
All things that are like, you should be a better
where
person.
Where he's feeling like, I remember he's already asking him, can these things be changed?
Right.
You know, then he
I'm
shows him this.
That.
Then he shows him this grave.
Right.
You know, this tiny plot.
Uh-huh.
Almost like a pauper's grave.
Whatever. Okay. Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And of course he's upset.
So you're going to get the fancy grave. Look, can these things be changed? Here's what can be changed. You can be a better person.
Yeah.
Tiny Tim can be changed. Let me tell you the one thing that can't be changed, buddy. That at some point, there's going to be a grave.
Yeah.
And you're names on it, unless you want to be fed to the birds. This is how this goes down. But that's the moment we're like, I'm going to have a tombstone? Fuck this! Christmas rules! Like, and that's the end of that. Okay, that's just my whining.
All right.
All right, Happy New Year to all of you sneakers out there.
Yes, Happy New Year, everybody.
And thanks for listening
Hogmanay.
To this show. What's that?
Hogmanay.
What's that mean?
It's a Scottish or Gaelic, isn't it?
Keep it out of the fucking show. Keep your Scottish out of the fucking show. That's my resolution, is to keep this show Scottish free.
Scottish free.
Not, I mean, Dave usually comes and does the show, eats a Scotch egg, and then just goes right into it.
We want to get off this show Scot free.
It's all uphill from now, folks. Wrap up the show, Dave. This is your job.
Well, thanks, everybody, for listening. We love you all. We respect you in the morning. Good night.
Good night. Who wants respect?